Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Rick Elmore, a dynamic blend of entrepreneur, retired NFL athlete, and robot engineer. As the CEO of Simply Noted, Rick has revolutionized handwritten mail, making personal connections in a digital age. With accolades like 40 under 40 and a track record of top 1% sales achievements, his expertise spans from marketing to entrepreneurship. Beyond the boardroom, Rick's journey from the football field to the corporate world is a testament to his versatility and drive. Whether he's discussing direct marketing or sharing insights from his NFL days, Rick's passion for making impactful impressions shines through. And I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and help us discover the power of genuine connections. So Rick, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. That was one of the best introductions I've ever had. So thank you.
Pat on the back there.
I love it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, honored to have you here. So before we get into kind of what you're doing now and everything, how did you even get into entrepreneurship? It's a bit of a story there.
Yeah.
Were your parents entrepreneurs?
Yeah, it's a great question. So both my parents were small business owners. My mom was a medical biller and she did medical billing for private practice, physical therapy practices. And then my stepdad was a contractor. So I grew up on the weekends making money, carrying stuff up and down ladders. Yeah, my family, I do come from a family of entrepreneurs, but they're more like solopreneurs. But yeah, my background's in athletics. We played football for a long time, was lucky enough to have a really good career in college at the University of Arizona, and then was drafted into the NFL in 2010. Got to play out my childhood dream for 3 years. Almost 4 years, I had a futures contract, just decided that was not the best thing for me. So hung up the cleats after 3 years, got into corporate America, was in medical device sales for about 6.5, 7 years. First year was rookie of the year, basically took everything that made me successful as an athlete and took it to my corporate world, which were all the intangibles, hard work, perseverance, drive, competition, team player. All those things you need to have to be a really successful athlete. And that's really what helped me be successful in my corporate career. I was rookie of the year, my rookie year at Stryker, which is a very large medical company in the United States. And then I was either top 1% or top 5 sales rep in the company for the next 5 years. Wow. I had a little itch I could not scratch. I was having all this success and still felt like a void. I knew I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I just never knew what I wanted to do. So I thought the next best thing I should do is go back and do my MBA. And that's exactly what I did in 2017. I was always a guy that always was looking. I always wanted to talk to somebody, ask a question, overturn this rock and see what this opportunity was, learn about this person's industry. And the MBA was just something that I thought would open my eyes to a whole new world. And that's exactly what it did. I don't think the MBA essentially, you know, helps you become an entrepreneur. But what I think it does, it gives you a good base level of knowledge of what it takes to be in business, of finance, marketing, law, all that stuff. It kind of opens your eyes to all these things. But I was a year into my program and I had a marketing professor going over all the success rates in marketing and everything was super nominal. And these are like 3 hour classes. I took 2 3-hour classes once a week, Wednesday nights. And then on Sundays, we did group work. But at the end of this 3 hour lecture, this marketing professor, I had this epiphany when he said something that was just so amazing to me. That was handwritten notes had a 99.2% open rate. And me being in sales, I just thought, man, number one, I grew up without a cell phone. I didn't get a cell phone until I was like 16. So I'm part of that generation. We used to handwrite notes. So I understood the value of something written in pen. And who does it anymore? Nobody. So mailboxes are empty. And I thought if I can get in front of my client 99.2% of the time in a personal way that stood out, it was going to make me more successful. I tested it. I bought a pen plotter from China. I wrote some handwritten notes on a really bad machine. And the response rate was just amazing. Over the next 6 weeks, I sold about $280,000 in new sales, which my quota on the month was 50 grand. So my whole business, my whole company was going nuts. These doctors were calling me. Yeah, these doctors were like, Rick, like, they call me like, hey, I just got your note. This is cool. Who does this anymore? Nobody. Like this offer sounds good. And I was using it as a sales tool. Hey, let's set up a lunch and talk about it. And I got 20 grand in commission over 6 weeks. And my VP of sales was like, what are you doing? It's working. And basically that was like my little entrepreneurial seizure moment. Every entrepreneur has it when that idea comes to life and the adrenaline fills your blood and you're excited and the world's in the palm of your hand and you just want to get going. So yeah, that was like my little coming of age to being an entrepreneur story.
That's great. That's a great story. I love it. And I'm a personal believer. I'm a convert in the power of handwritten notes and postcards. I definitely feel the power of it. Now, what were some of the biggest challenges to step out of NFL and then become top in sales? Was it just easy peasy? You just stepped out of one into the other? Obviously, I'm assuming there had to be some sort of learning curve. You had no previous sales skills before.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great question. So I think for the intangible things that I took from being an athlete to then going into the corporate world, I don't think that was a really hard transition for me, from studying my competitors, understanding the product, don't take no for an answer, overcoming objections, all these things I've already had 2 decades of dealing with. But the thing that was hard for me was transferring from like the locker room lifestyle with your brothers that will go to war with you to then the corporate world, which was just nowhere near what it was as an athlete. your locker room is like your family. Like you'll die for them, and everybody's like super driven and competitive and motivated and wants to get better. And it's really hard to find that in the real world.
Yes, it is.
It's most people are just trying to get by or do the least amount of work. Yeah. So if you're willing to work hard, it's really easy to rise to the top. But to become the best, you got to be a master of the basic foundational things of being successful, which is being a good team player, knowing how to do the fundamentals, which is basic stuff, respond to emails, prospecting, follow up, calling. A lot of people won't make their calls every day. So think about it. If you're supposed to do 50 calls a day and you only do 10 today, now you're behind 40. So some people don't even know how to follow a process. So yeah. I think like the intangible stuff was really easy for me, but from going from like the football field to the corporate world was an eye opener for me. Cause I thought I was going to see a lot of that still, because in corporate it's super competitive, but it was a lot more politics. I don't even know how to explain it.
Yeah.
It was,
I get it.
It wasn't as genuine, I guess. It wasn't as authentic. It was just a lot more surfaced and political. And
social status games, which I found
for clicky. Me, yeah.
I just saw it. So it was such a shock for me. I was so surprised. I remember, because you played the NFL, this is irrelevant. I remember the first client I ever worked with where we made over $1 million in sales. We did something like over 3 million sales in under 8 months. And I remember feeling like, this is it. This is our Super Bowl team. And the infighting that happened and the political stuff that happened for people to eat other people's commissions and push this person out of the company. I was so flabbergasted because I'm like, what are you doing? Like, if you're a Super Bowl team, you keep everyone together. What about the dynasty? But there wasn't it at all. It was like, make hay while the sun shines and F you. I was so shocked. I was
And so many people are short-sighted like that. That's why they don't have compounding ongoing success over decades. You may be successful over a couple of years, but to have that dynasty success over decades, you got to take care of people and build that team and that loyalty, because without people, you can't have success. And that's something I've learned as an entrepreneur. I went really fast by myself for a while, but in order to keep going and scale, we had to bring on more people, develop systems, processes, lift them up, give them more responsibility. And that's where we're at 5 years in our business, is trying to scale. And that's what got you to $1 million won't get you to 10 million. And that's really what we're trying to do right now.
So can you talk to that part? Cause that's maybe the nitty gritty stuff, like the systems and process. What are some of the things that maybe surprised you that became mission critical that didn't matter so much when it was a small
show? I think,
joke?
Yeah, that's another great question. I think when you're early on in the process, you're doing a lot of the things that you enjoy doing, building the product, talking to the customers. And then as you scale your business, as much as you want to be involved in the business as a business owner, you got to get out of working like in your business and work on it. And that's something it's been like a punch in the face to me, is trying to figure out how to remove myself from this business entirely. So many of our customers want to talk to me because I have the relationship with them, and trying to completely remove myself from that step in the process, has been hard. Improving systems and processes, building systems that can scale, because systems that you build today won't necessarily work for you when you have 30 employees versus when you only had 3. So constantly trying to stay ahead of what you need as an organization, being ahead of problems. That's really where I'm at right now as an entrepreneur. Is as much as I love working on this business or working in this business, talking to clients, I love selling, I love marketing, I love SEO, I love Google Ads, I love being on like in the mix, but I'm trying to remove myself and get other people an opportunity to elevate themselves, teach them a new skill, trust them to do it. And for most entrepreneurs, their first business is a baby to them. It's really hard for them to let go. It's when you see your kid and you're trying to push them out into the world and go out there and grow, it's really hard to like let them do that. So that's where I'm at in this business. I'm 5 years in and I'm trying to scale it. It's a whole different beast to tackle or fight every day.
Yeah, I had a buddy, he wanted to build his business and sell it. And one of the tips that he said that he got was, every day you wake up, that to-do list that you get to do, you'll never sell your business how you want to sell it, as long as all those to-do items are on your list and not someone else.
Yeah, they call it kill the king. So I listened to, Built to Sell. There's like a show on like entrepreneurs selling their business. And also The E-Myth by Michael E. Gerber. That's another 101 entrepreneur business book every business owner should read. E-Myth. I actually met Michael E. Gerber here in Phoenix last year. Oh, wow. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, I got a signed copy of his book. He was talking at a show that my friend was at that I attended. But it's just, you got to scale. If you're working in your business and your business depends on you, that business is going to suck the life out of you.
Yeah, I actually went through all their training. I read the book, I did the course, and then I did the coaching program early in my career. For those that know the buzzword but don't necessarily live it, what's the difference between working in a business versus working on a business? Can you give a couple?
So working in it, so early days, you're going to be working in your business, try to sell, try to market, try to build your product, try to basically get the airplane off the ground.
Right.
And then it's different for everybody. For me, it was like year 3.5, year 4 is really where I had to step back and say, I feel like we rocket ship into a ceiling and then we bounce down and we can't break through the glass because there's just systems in place that slow us down and cause bottlenecks. So working in your business, you're talking to clients, right? You're doing a lot of the busy work for SEO, managing VAs or virtual assistants. And then working on your business is not doing any of that. It's building out systems and processes of exactly step-by-step how to do everything and then train other people on how to do that job for you. Mm-hmm. And you have to, and there's a rule, I forget who told me this, as what book was it? But it was like, if somebody can do it 70% as good as you, it's worth delegating. Yeah. There's no one's ever going to do it as good as you.
Right.
But especially if it's your baby, but if they can do it 70% as good, it's worth delegating because you got to look at what your time is worth. Yeah. And what's it cost for somebody to do SEO for you? What's it cost for someone to manage your ads for you? What's it cost for somebody to do production? You got to figure out what this all is and then figure out what's not worth your time. And if it's not worth your time, you got to build systems and train other people to do it. And that's like you said, your friend, if you're working in your business and everything goes through you, you're never going to be able to sell it. So you got to kill the king, you got to remove yourself. And the only way to do that is to work on it and build systems.
Yeah, 100%. I really love that. You're one of the first multimillionaires I ever met. That's what he says, Daryl, you just got to understand everyone's going to be a beta version of you. Because I was really in it. I was running my martial arts school at the time. And he came by. I almost didn't even call him back. And I remember I called him. This guy blew my mind. Just short sidebar here. I don't know if it's relevant or not. But this guy called. And I wasn't really interested because I was trying to fill group classes. And he left a voicemail looking for private lessons. I almost didn't call him back. And then I did. And I brought him in and it was like a demo lesson. I'll give you a feel for it. And it, like in the middle of it, I'm here for 2 weeks. Sign me up for one a day, minus maybe 2 days. Here's my card. And I was like, okay. And he just said, charge me whatever you think it's worth, kid. And I'm like, okay. And he handed me a black Visa and I'd like never seen one before. I'm like, what's going on? And I was like, okay. And so I billed him. And then I remember going back and I was like a little baffled because this guy was so out of shape. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, this is our general class warm up. And this guy's like panting for breath. And I got to sit down on the bench. And so he's taking this rest. And so I'm like, we paid for the hour. What's new with you, man? He's like, oh, I feel good. I feel like I achieved like a real milestone in my life. Like I got two sons and now I just put some like gold bullion in a security deposit box for him with a 300 grand in cash. And but it just feels like they'll have that no matter what happens to me. And I was like, wait, whoa. I was like, hold back the phone. I'm like, wait, you got two kids? Yeah. And you put gold bullion in and a couple $100,000 in cash for each. He's like, yeah. I'm like, what are you, some kind of multimillionaire? And when I said he was slouched like this, he's like, yeah. Yes, I am a multimillionaire. It never dawned on the guy. He was a funny guy. I got stories for days about this guy. I remember we were trying to get into this busy restaurant. Anyways, and it was like, he picks me up. We're going out. And where are we going? And I forget the name. Like, we're never going to get in there. You want to go right in? Like, it's going to be an hour lineup. Sure enough, we pull up. Huge lineup outside the restaurant door. He just walks to the front, goes to the lady, and he goes, put a name. Sorry, sir, it's going to be like an hour. He's like, yeah, no worry, here you go. And he hands her a $100 bill. She's like, no, sir, I can't do this. Oh, no, don't worry, just let your conscience be your guide. And pushes it back to her, and he goes and sits at the back of the line. And 5 minutes later, the manager's there, and they just plunked the table and chairs like in the middle of the floor. To the point we were like bumping everybody around us, just trying to like get into the chairs. Like they just forced another chair into the floor. He was an interesting character that way, but almost the common knowledge worked. More people would have six pack abs. More people would be rich and famous. So there is some to this. Yeah. So what I guess, so you master sales, you understand the process, you're starting your own business, you get it off the ground in that. I know you've talked about building robots. Can you speak to that a little bit? Automating the process in this day and age. That's a real.
Yeah. When I first heard the idea in my MBA, it's like handwritten notes were a great sales and marketing tool because of the open rate. I thought that was a no-brainer, but there was no way to scale it. So I thought the only way to do this, there has to be a machine out there that does it. And I started looking up companies that were doing it. There was a company called Bond, and they weren't around too long. They launched in a bad industry, in the wedding industry. There was this company called Bond that used little pen plotters or 3D printers with gantries to handwrite notes. But the big issue was there was no paper feed. So somebody had to replace the paper, hit a button, and it would go. So we started with those same machines. I was like, man, if they're doing it, we can do it. And I quickly learned how bad that was. And that was really the Achilles heel of that business and why they ended up failing. I actually tried buying their client list when they went out of business. And I talked to the original founders. Hey, kid, good luck. This is a tough industry. I was like, oh, thanks. And he started with $1 million in funding and I started with zero. But I knew robotics were going to be a big play in this business if it was ever going to be successful. We went from a pen plotter to an auto pen, which helped us get going, but was so limited in what it could do. It really was just meant to write signatures. It's what the president uses. And we were doing letters and envelopes and all these custom orders. And the software was made in the 80s. Like, it's really outdated. And the handwriting engine was very limited. So it really looked like a robot. If you're looking at it, it was writing in patterns. So you can really tell. And I always thought, like, what was the point of sending something if it looked like a robot wrote it? So we only leveraged that technology for a little bit. And we quickly found out we had to build our own. And that has been really the hardest, but probably the most rewarding part of this journey was building our own handwriting robot. We went through 14 phase zeros, which a phase zero is just like an exploratory phase with an engineering company where they basically, you pay them for a week's worth of work and they dive into your project and they give you a proposal on what they think you should do and how much it would cost. Out of those 14, we narrowed it down to three. Of those three, we went through an additional phase where we said, hey, we just want to make sure you're sure. We want to pay you for an additional 2 days. And we showed them the comparing proposals we got, the proposals we got without the pricing or the logo. So they didn't know who it was. Said, hey, here's the other two companies we're thinking about working with. We want to work with you. Look at what they're saying. Tell us if you think what they're doing is better or why you wouldn't do it. And then we narrowed it down to one company and we went with them. And it took us 3 years and $1 million now. And customer funded, that's net revenue sales to build this robot. And it's completely our own. We built a motherboard completely fabricated here in a machine manufacturing warehouse in Gilbert, Arizona. Everything. We have 6 pending patents on it, 3 design, 3 utility. We designed our own software, the handwriting engine.
I love it.
Everything, the electronic. Yeah, everything is our own design. So that's really what's been the hardest thing and the most rewarding. It really separates us from, there's other players in this space, but I truly believe our product is the most compelling in terms of writing quality, production capabilities, turnaround times, SLAs, automation. Another thing with the old technology is it couldn't work with modern automation software. So like everything had to be run manually. So like for every 10 computers you had to, or every 10 machines, you had to have a separate computer. All of ours is completely automated. So as orders come in, it's sent to the machines, write them, and then they kick them out. And yeah, I've probably made every mistake a CEO could make. This is my first company. I had no idea how to build a website, how to build a robot, how to work with software, how to work with engineers. But they say ignorance is bliss sometimes, but it making those mistakes, it does. Because if I knew I had to do all this, I probably wouldn't start this company. It's really, it's been really hard and a lot of sleepless nights, but it's the evolution of Rick Elmore. It's just, it's made me so much better as a business person, and learning how to work and solve all these problems.
Yeah, I love that. I don't know if it's any relief or not, but I may have or may not have mentioned 2020, I spent about 50 grand, hired 10 plus research assistants to help me go through all the academic literature on business success. Everybody was arguing about this science or that. And the man that raised me worked in applied physics and geology. So I thought, what does the science have to say about business success? Because I'd help people make a million and then, you know, like you, they hit, either hit ceilings, or one client almost got taken out by the IRS. And you look at companies like Blockbuster versus Netflix. Blockbuster was a $6 billion company, ended up going bankrupt. They could have hired any talent, could have developed any technology. They could have bought Netflix if they wanted it. They just didn't see it coming. Yeah. So I hired all these research assistants to go through all the published literature we could find from all over the world, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, Australia, Canada, US, and more, Thailand. And so we found 8 critical success factors. And so they were self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skill, sale, business, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. And so those are the big categories. And we drilled down into each, what are the components that make success in that? And under money management, the key pillars were like low capital investment, leanness, being debt-free, heavily investing in R&D, having high quality products and services, spending into asset and sales growth, and capacity utilization. So capacity utilization is a fancy word for getting everything you can from what you got, from your resources, your employees, in terms of training, productivity, intensity, but also with your money, capital intensity. And then assets and sales growth, this is everything from hiring sales reps to working on a webinar to paid ads to assets like patents, like specialty technology, those things that create like a physical barrier between you and your competition. So although it was a pain in the ass, sounds like you spent a lot of money, but in a lot of ways,
Yeah, I'm glad you just said that, because it's those people who are out front that are pushing the edge or pushing the limitations of the industry, the leaders in the space, the thought leaders. Those are the ones that are really trying to make a difference in the space. And what happens is when those people do that, you're naturally going to pull your competitors with you, because you're going to make, and this has been one of the hard things about our service, is like we push so far in advance our product so far, is that we introduce a lot of people to our product, and then our competitors don't do anything. Like they literally just, it's like a, I call it like a vulture. We're out there and we did the hunt, we got the hunt, and then they just come down there and get the pieces behind you. Or all they'll do is just PPC us and then just beat us on price. And like, oh yeah, whatever they said they'll do, we'll do it cheaper. I was just like, yeah, but check out the product, check out the production, check, are they even a real company? Do they have real employees? Yeah. And we never lose the big business, but it's just, it's this, the, it's been really hard. That's just, and I'm being, I'm probably my, if our competitors watching this, they're probably laughing because they're like, yeah, that's exactly what we do. Yeah. But yeah, it's been really interesting because we've done everything you just said. We've tried to create such a far separation between us and anybody else. And that's been investing in R&D, investing in software, investing in SEO, investing in podcasts. We've been on over 200 podcasts and we've been in over 2,500 publications. And that's news outlets, resources. Yeah, we do all this work and it's just really interesting because your competitors will always come in and try to just pick off of what you're doing versus trying to be out there doing what you're doing, which is making a better product. Sorry for rambling. I'm probably just venting there.
I heard this great talk. I'm a fan, so I'll mention the book, $100 Million Offers. Alex was talking about what he wrote. I'm a big fan of that book. I didn't necessarily feel like there was anything new that I hadn't known yet, but it was such a great it's just a, it's a timeless classic, and it's just a great, even as a resource guide to review that stuff. And I'm not trying to,
I'll tell you, I just listened to that book, and I'll tell you the biggest thing I took away, which, me being a young entrepreneur, my biggest mistake is, he makes a really good point in that book where it says, if somebody has 50 pounds to lose, because he's a fitness guy,
yep,
and he runs gyms, he says, if somebody has 50 pounds to lose in this, and you got to think about when you're starting your business and the problem that you're solving, does that person want to learn how to change their lifestyle, go to the gym 5 days a week, make sacrifices, wake up early? Or does that person want to take a pill or do liposuction, something that's, they don't have to change anything.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, when I started this, is, oh, I'm going to change everything. We're going to make this product and make everybody learn how to use our product, versus, which is the other thing, teach them how to change your life, get yeah. better, change your lifestyle, which is, if you think about it, like, successful business play off of people's habits, right? Coffee, alcohol, gambling, all right. these successful trillion-dollar industries go into people's like vices. Yep. And I don't know, I thought that was a really powerful takeaway of that book. And because I'm really passionate about this and trying to change the way people do marketing business, but it's really hard to try to get people to change to you versus trying to just go sell to what the market wants, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it 100%. And speaking to that, one of the things that, like this, so I'll say two things. I started talking about Alex, but I'm actually gonna talk about CrossFit for a minute. The founder of CrossFit, Greg Glassman, has this great talk where he talks about that markets are ultimately unknown and unknowable. So if I ask yeah. you, people are in market to buy a new car, you can see like keyword searches, there's indicators, but ultimately you'll never know the true number, and it changes every hour of every day. So it's unknown. The market is unknown and unknowable, but everybody knows what excellence looks like. And so if you just focus on being the most excellent solution to a problem, that should see you through good times and bad. And so now take this back to what Alex is saying. He was talking about his book, $100 million offers. And for him, he's investing in companies like 1 to 10 million, right? Like he's doing VC funding, essentially. He's trying to invest in companies and scale them up. And he was saying that in this business, it's all about inputs and outputs. How much of an input do I need to give, and what's my output? And the one yeah. input that's the most expensive, once you've gotten to this level, he's talking about, like, you got companies, $100 million portfolio, is time. And yeah. what he realized from that book, he originally wrote that book to be an internal guide, an internal document to give to the founders of the companies he was investing in and to his own staff, helping them grow. And that was it. And he said he spent a year on that with that in mind. And he said, I spent a year, some days, 6 hours a day, just working on hammering this out. And it was his wife that convinced him to publish it publicly. So he did. And he said, when he published it publicly, all he did was put a simple post on Facebook. And I had 10,000 followers, which in the influencer game is nothing. And he said, ever since then, every month, the book has sold more than the month before. And he was talking to the guy that wrote the book for 75 hard. And he was agreeing the same thing. He's, yeah, every month we sell more than we did the month before. And Alex said that it was a lesson to him that if we can create something truly exceptional, that the market, they get to decide what exceptional. Like, a lot of people, they do their best, but it might not be what's required to be the yeah. best. And then he yeah. talks about how by really working hard to make something exceptional, the customers are carrying it forward into the future.
Yeah. Right? And that's really hard to, I was listening to a talk from the Y Combinator. So it's really hard to, you can't predict that. You can't predict what's going to be right. exceptional, what the market accepts. At the beginning stages, it is really 100% luck. You just, if you're passionate about something, and you think it's solving a problem, you think it's going to provide value, there's ways to get some indicators here to make sure there's no red flags, make sure people pay for it. You got to dive in, because it's all about timing. It's all about luck.
Yeah.
You can persevere for 20 years and then maybe eventually it'll catch on. But a lot of these people who catch on and it takes off, you can't predict it. You can't, like, there's yeah, indicators, but you just, there's just no way to tell.
Very critical element of it. Timing is hugely
critical. Yes.
Because the business graveyard is littered with world-class products and service that the world wasn't
ready. Yeah.
Or that
nobody yeah. You know? I couldn't agree more. Yeah. Just like the NFL, some of the best NFL players never made it to the NFL. It's relationship, wrong place, wrong time. I played for a bunch of different teams. I played for 6 teams. But I mean, I was playing some of my best football in the wrong places where they just didn't need me, or I was in the wrong situation, or the coach brought his guy from his last team and they gave him guaranteed money. That's just, it happens like that. And all you can control is your attitude and your effort. Show up every single day and continue to get better. And hopefully you can catch that wave. Okay. You just got to time yourself. You just got to position yourself for that wave, but you got to have an eye on that wave and be ready when it comes.
Yeah, I love it. That's really good advice. So what are some of the behaviors and skills that you think are important for your staff to improve or develop?
Staff or for entrepreneurs?
Let's do both.
Sure. For staff, it's what we look for is reliability, consistency, coachability, open, like communicators, people who aren't afraid to say, hey, this could be done better. But we do have a rule. If you don't like something, you can't just say you don't like something. You have to come and say, hey, I don't like this. Why don't we try that? You have to come with a solution, because anybody can point out and say, hey, and be a criticizer, but it takes some type of level of understanding and caring to come up with a solution for that problem, some type of thought. But yeah, I would say those are the things that we really look for in a team. You know, people are reliable and can persevere, but for entrepreneurs, that's another thing is perseverance, pain tolerance, being able to, you got to be a visionary. You really got to, be able to conceptualize your vision, communicate it to people, get people to buy into it and help you want to build it. And I think people like that have natural leadership qualities, which are hardworking, high energy, consistent, can persevere. Don't stay down. When you get knocked down, you get up. You show up every single day, no matter what. So I think those entrepreneurs who make it are the ones who have like really hard, thick skin, but at the same time, they can get people to rally and jump on board and come build something special with them.
Yeah.
Good leaders.
I agree. Consistency and discipline. One of the other factors I mentioned was self-efficacy. And self-efficacy, we found in our research, a lot of people want to beat the drum of leadership. And you got to have a vision. In our research, you need a vision, but that's strategic planning and market intelligence, nothing to do with self-efficacy or leadership. The vision is not in the leadership part. That's why you can hire a manager and a CEO who maybe doesn't have the vision of the company. Self-efficacy is having specific personality traits, leadership skills, and disciplines. And the personality traits are a locus of control, which means being a control freak about what you can control, extroversion, openness to experience, agreeableness, conscientiousness, and acceptance of criticism and feedback. And then leadership, our research, according to our research, what is leadership? It is self-awareness skills, communication, cooperation skills, emotional intelligence skills, and adaptability. It's those things. There's nothing to do with the vision. There's nothing to do with the vision and the mission. You have to lead the company. So grammatically and from a language perspective, that is leadership. But where you lead them, how you lead them, that's really a function of strategic planning and market intelligence. And of course, the disciplines, time management, commitment to improve, discipline itself, urgency, physical health, mental health habits. Those are critically important in a lot of ways. Yeah. Did you want to say anything?
You went in a lot of different directions, but I do think, especially in the first few years, being self-efficient is extremely important. But there are a lot more resources now today in 2023, almost 2024, that there weren't 5 years ago or 6 years ago, with all these AI tools. And the quality of virtual assistants now is 10 times better than it was when I first started. I do have a 15-minute rule. I do like to share this with any young entrepreneurs, because what happens is a lot of people get stuck in their problems and they bash their head into a wall. And before you know it, they got nothing done today because they just got sucked into a problem. A simple like YouTube, Google search can really help you look at your problems differently. But after 15 minutes, like for me, like we're creating a ticket system right now for our business. And the software we're using is Zoho. And you can find like Zoho experts or desk experts or ticket experts on Upwork and pay them $300. What is your time worth, right? Is your time worth $300 an hour? That person's going to spend 2 or 3 days building out your in-depth ticket system for you. And they're obligated to do a good job. And the quality of these people now are way better than they were in 2016. But those are the younger infancy stages of like Fiverr and Upwork. But Fiverr and Upwork, we get tons of great consulting. I do an SEO audit once a month from the same guy, and something I would have to charge somebody, or somebody would charge me like $5,000 a month. I pay him $500 a month. He says, hey, Rick, this is what's going good. This is what's not going good here. And you learn too. They say, hey, this is what you should do to fix it. So you're paying $500 for them to consult, but they're also teaching you at the same time versus you struggling for 7 days trying to figure it out. So being efficient is attacking your problems, but not being afraid to seek help and get help, because that help's going to help you get better faster versus being what do you call it, thick-headed or strong-headed or whatever you want to call it, and say, I'm just going to do it myself. Like, you can't do that as a business owner. Like, you right. have to understand, like, the help is there, get it, and it's going to make you and your business that much better.
So how does 15 minutes fit into that? How is it the 15
minutes? Oh, 15 minutes. Like, you work on a problem for 15 minutes, and if you can't solve it, like, if you're getting stuck, go ask somebody for help. Because imagine, like, you get 8 hours to work, right? And you spend 2 hours on a problem. That's 25% of your workday. Like, for something that you can pay $100 or $300, and they do a 10 times better job anyways. And they're going to show you how to do it. So you're getting consulting and you're learning and you're getting the stress-free, no headache help. And they're going to do a better job than you anyways. Yeah. So 15 minutes, I always tell my team, like, if you're trying to solve a problem, try to Google it, YouTube it. Do the surface search. If you're getting stuck, if it's more than 15 minutes, write it down and then find somebody. And they usually bring it to me. We look it up on Fiverr, Upwork, or I now have a business mentor. I go to them and say, hey, how would you solve this problem? I don't get stuck in problems anymore. If you get stuck, progress doesn't happen.
Yeah, I love that. I love that a lot. And I think an easy way, like a little story for people to help them understand the power of it is, say there's two people that want to go win a gold medal at the Olympics, right? Both are starting from the same bare bones minimum. One of them is buying all the DVDs, all the books, all the cassettes, all the courses, and they're going to sit in their garage with their buddy and figure it out. And the other one is going to go build a team of 5 previous Olympic world champions in that sport to coach them through all the bottlenecks. Yeah. Now, both have the potential to get there, but who's going to get there with less injury, pain, and suffering?
Yeah.
You know, it's just so evident when you break it down like that. So I love that. And we're all, even myself, we're all too afraid to ask for help sometimes or about the costs or whatever. And you got to get out of that mindset. That will keep you, success as a team sport. I love that. I love that you brought that up. So that's a great one. Now, you mentioned kind of new resources and trends. What do you feel like is on the horizon for the next 5, 10, 15 years? What trends are you watching or that you think that entrepreneurs listening maybe need to pay attention to?
Yeah, so I read a very interesting article on Forbes this weekend, and it was saying that basically all basic business jobs, business development reps, basic SEO, basic marketing jobs, they're going to be completely irrelevant in 2 years. It's just because of how fast things are changing with this large language models, AI, software revolution that we're going through. And I think that's just the natural evolution of business. I think every 10 to 20 years, you see the business world change. 20 years ago, the internet was young. And we're now just going through that evolution again. So what I'm really buying into, and I'm trying to build up my audience, build up my connections. I'm trying to get out there, do more podcasting, connect with great people like you. Just try to get out there and build my audience. But then also a lot of automation and AI. Really diving into like the Zapier automation, make like integrations, because that's what businesses are going to want to do, is how to be more profitable. It's like, how can you get more done with less? And it's amazing what you can do with Zapier now. Yeah. I thought it was amazing 5 years ago when I started using it, but you can integrate basically any software now. Every software is open. They have an API. You can use a webhook, or they have straight integrations in the Zapier, and you can connect everything. We're using the OpenAI connection to Zapier to respond to ticket requests, or when people, we have the little AI chat bot on the website where we've just preloaded it with all, we have 390 blog posts now, and we've loaded all the information from our blog posts into our chat bot, all our FAQs into our chat bot. So when people go to our chat, they're not just, hey, like they can get an answer now versus trying to book an appointment, which makes me more profitable because I don't have to take a 30-minute meeting with somebody asking for what pricing is. I'm really buying into the podcasting, social, build your audience, plus automation and AI. If I think I was going to invest more of my time and energy, that's where it's going, because that's going to scale. Having awareness with an audience is really important. Your influence. Yeah, that's where I'm really paying attention to.
I think those are great. Those are great tips. Someone I look up to is a guy named Naval. He's had 70 successful exits, and he was an early stage investor in Twitter, Uber, Foursquare, all these big companies. And he talks about leverage and permission versus permissionless leverage, and that all the old fortunes were made on permission-based leverage, capital, and people, essentially, right? Either, and you need permission. Someone's got to give you the money, or you need even a government. They have to elicit compliance from the population base to be able to print money. Somehow you have to get permission from someone to create or borrow capital, or teams. Either you have to hire a team, you have to negotiate with them. Even if it was slave labor, you need enforcers to crack the whip. Yeah. Someone's got to be on your side. But now we're in an era of permissionless forms of leverage, which is media and code. And there's no permission. There's no one. No one's governing whether I'm going to do this interview or not with you. And the same thing with look at that Flappy Bird guy. Some kid in Malaysia in his basement built this Flappy Bird game, app game, and blew up, had something like 100 million downloads in I don't even know what. It was just insane. He kicked off a whole genre of one button push games, you know? And this is just someone in a basement kind of thing.
Yeah.
In an obscure part of the world compared to civilized society, so to speak. But they're totally permissionless. And then I think back to just trying to be excellent at what we do. And then you talk about connecting with people. At the end of the day, all a company is a group of people solving the pain of another group of people, and they do it via a product or service. And so it's really insightful that your focus is to connect with more people and to focus on solving the problem as excellent as possible, taking every opportunity, every advantage you can to better show up. Because on your end, you're like, oh, it saves me from having to be on the call to answer questions about pricing. But also that chatbot's going to be running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's going to give the same quality of response. It's not going to get sick. It's not going to have good days, bad days. It's just there. And so it's
not delayed. It's instant answers. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's a better experience, less frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned a couple of times, I'm curious. I actually don't really ask this question a lot of guests, but what do you feel are the most effective and productive traffic activities to get word of your business out there?
Short form content, video content's like exploding right now. We don't do nearly enough of it, but really what we've made huge amounts of investments, both in time and money, was SEO over the last 2.5 years. I still firmly believe that like Google is, I have a business mentor who says, Google is God. If you play nice, Google will be nice to you and they'll reward you. And it's, and what he means by that is you're constantly improving your website, improving the indexing of your website, updating content. And we've been very lucky. We have over 400,000 people that come to our website every single month organically, just based off of the keywords that we're targeting, the rankings and positioning we are on Google and a lot of our landing pages and blogs, which creates a lot of new opportunities every day. We get leads from organic traffic that we've been working on for the last 3 years. So I'm really high on SEO, and I'm continually every single day trying to figure out a way to continually invest in it, because I think it's going to be around for a while. Because I don't think everyone's going to jump on AI, maybe the early adopters, the tech savvy people, but there's, you got to think about the people on the iPhone, right? There's still tons of people that struggle with the iPhone 17 years later. So I still think the basic Google traffic is going to be around for a while, but I think short form content, getting on YouTube, creating videos, people don't want to read anymore unless it's like listicles, like best skateboarding brands. That's what people want to see, short, concise content. They don't want to read these, what do they call them? Skyscraper blogs, 3,000 words. Like no one wants to do that anymore. I think if I was going to start today over, I would still go SEO route, because in the long run, it's worth it. It's all that evergreen content that will keep paying, you know, dividends, but it's all this short form content. Get comfortable in front of a camera, connect with people like you, create a podcast, create value, share your knowledge, and position yourself as an expert in your field. And then that's going to help you and your business thrive in the long run.
Now so I fully agree with everything that you've said, and there's only three ways to get traffic: buy it, borrow it, build it. Now, what about selling that way? So are you saying SEO to lead gen, to them where you have your conversation? Yeah.
So what happens is people will find us organically and then sign up for our website. Then we retarget them with automatic emails, or they'll request like a demo or a sample, and then they're entered into a different marketing channel. But yeah, there's a lot of ways that we need to get better in those areas. But yeah, a lot of the organic traffic people, you know, our conversion rate, I was telling you before this, it's like 1 to 1.5%. So we're converting a lot of people every single month. They're not all good leads. I'll be honest with you. Not everybody goes to your website's a good lead, but that's the fun part about SEO and marketing, is like figuring out how to now retarget your your SEO strategy to now go towards the better prospect. So it's a game that is never over. It's always evolving. New tools are happening. New updates that Google launches that feels like every month now. So it's, you see the update, then you start changing everything to do what they want. And they're like, oh, we're rechanging things again. You're like,
Yeah, I know.
And they're doing it more now and ever. Look at how often they're launching these updates. And it's because of all this AI stuff. But 5 years ago, they were doing it like once a quarter. Now they're doing it like once a month or more. It's just wild.
It is wild. This has been such a good, high-value call. People listening probably want to go back and listen to it a couple of times. I do want to be respectful for your time. I know we're almost getting to the top of our time here. Is there anything I haven't asked you yet that I should have asked you?
Not going over my story, unless there's like anything you want to ask about the business, the technology, any stuff like that. But no.
Because I actually use this. I may need to switch over to you. But I've been sending postcards for years. And a well-timed postcard with a personalized message, I remember I had a friend, he was a subcontractor, and he was Darryl. I just helped my first client make over $1 million. And I went back to my hometown for Christmas. And I ran into this guy at a Christmas party, grew up with him. Like, Darryl, what's the highest impact money I can spend on marketing? Like, how do I get rich in marketing in my business? I'm like, so what, you're a subcontractor? And he goes, yeah. And I go, how many people feed you work typically? Like one.
Yeah.
Oh, there's four guys that give me work. It's like, okay, so go buy them a bottle. What's their favorite booze? When's their anniversary? Yeah. When's their birthday? Go buy them a couple of bottles of their favorite drink. Go remember their anniversary. Give them a gift to give their wife for their anniversary. I was like, that $100. Like, people don't get that. I told my wife, I guess, I told her with one of her clients to do this sort of thing. I think she spent $250 in terms of like gift baskets and personalized notes to her. And this woman for 3-4 years probably spent $50,000 with her. I had someone pay me well over $250,000 over 3 years. And I probably spent less than $500, but it was those personal touches, that human to human connection. Can you talk about that? What are some of the most successful clients?
What's a tough pill to swallow nowadays is that everything's so commoditized. Everything's so competitive. There's a different option. There's a competitor out there for everything. And so often we think that we are the only one, we're the best. Like, people should work with us. If not, like, it's on them. And you can't have that mindset. And like you just said, no matter what, doesn't matter what AI is going to do for the future. People want to do business with people. They want to do business with people they like and trust. And it's usually built around the relationship. So what you really want to do is think about, what are you doing to build the best relationships with your clients? And like you're preaching to the choir here, because I say this to everybody. It's, what are you doing? Are you saying thank you? Or sending them a gift card and saying, hey, take your wife out to dinner, or take your spouse out to dinner. Okay, I was just thinking about you. Here's a $5 Starbucks gift card. We'll love to catch up the next time you're grabbing coffee. Like, those unique personalized touches. And that's what we're trying to do, is create genuine personal touches at scale or completely automated. And I do think what is old is new again. Everybody, mailboxes are empty. So it's really easy to stand out in a mailbox, especially if it's handwritten. We are positioning ourselves for that wave. I just don't think there's a better way at scale. You know, think if you had 2,000 clients, are you going to send them 2,000 I don't know, t-shirts, I don't know, right, 2,000 gift baskets? That would be so hard to do and so expensive. And for us, it's $1, $1 or $2, depending on how much you send. And it's like, what you're telling that person is you're giving them 5 minutes of your time, which nobody does anymore. It's really hard to give people your time because we're so inundated and pulled in so many different directions. So we think a handwritten note is extremely valuable.
Yeah.
I think it's worth its weight in gold. You're showing that person that you took time, that you care. And even if they ever found out you use a service like us, it's still different than an email. It's still different than a text message. Yeah. It's still better than not doing anything. And it's still going to burn a little bit of a memory hole in their brain that you did something like that. So it's all about buying that counter space, that shelf life. These handwritten notes literally stand up on tables. They last for weeks, sometimes months, or sometimes people just keep them and they're keepsakes. I just think handwritten notes, especially in a digital and AI like revolution era that we are in, they're just more valuable than ever. And people will always do business with people that they like and trust. And that's what we should be asking ourselves at the end of the day. And now, all the major industries we work with, real estate, mortgage, nonprofit, political, direct response, everything, it's all predicated off relationships. People
buy with people they like or organizations they share similar values with. So it's connecting personally that matters.
I think that's really powerful. I've been sending all your clients a thank you card is easily just a simple thing to do. That just, when was the last time you went and got a massage and they sent you a postcard to your house? It's just the little things like that, yeah. Like you said. And it's that, it's a physical presence. I close my laptop after this, everything on my computer is gone. Even if it's on my phone, so many things are buried in your phone, but that physical presence, that's like giving, when you give someone a book, like it, they have it, they keep it, it goes in a drawer somewhere. They're not going to throw it out right away. They leave it and then they see it in 3 months. People are just, I feel like they're missing out on that. I think people see, oh, it's a dollar per message. And they go, oh, I shouldn't spend that on, maybe I'm not on new relationships. But what about the people that you know? What if you can remember someone's birthday and write them a handwritten birthday? Every single one of your customers, you could remember their birthday and send them a handwritten note to all of your customers. It goes back to just telling my friend, right? Hey, like these four guys are giving you enough work to feed your family. You're building a house. Congrats to you. How much have you spent on them to showing them how grateful you are? Right. Ultimately, if you're remembering their birthday, you give them their holiday, the anniversary with their wife, you're helping them look good with the missus, and then it comes up and maybe bid on the next job and you're a little bit more expensive than the other one. Right. But there's that like intangible value to the relationship.
Yeah.
And that part just, it's real. It's a real thing and bonding. Yeah. I think it's so powerful. So what, any other ways people using handwritten notes?
It's either a relationship building tool. So we say it's either a retention tool or an acquisition tool. We do, I hate to say it, but we do have a lot of people who use us for prospecting, booking meetings, business development, just because I use it, I'm not going to lie. I still use it to acquire a new business because it works. Like,
How do you use it to get new customers?
So now what we do is we'll reach out to prospects in whatever niche we're going after, and we'll write a little call to act or who you are. So introduction, call to action, make an ask. So like Rick simply noted, this is how we can help you. And at the end of the note, we'll always say, P.S. This was written by a machine. And then that's like the hook. They're like, they thought it was handwritten, but at the end, it's like the interesting fact that make them want to learn more is that a robot wrote the note. We see a lot of successful response rates for something like that for our business, because we're trying to sell robotic, scalable handwritten notes. But we get tons of people in home service use us. You know, think about roofing, windows, solar, all these large ticket items, car dealerships, right? Where one response can be tens of thousands of dollars in revenue. So we do see a lot of prospecting and from those industries, but still I always tell people this service should be used for retention, relationship building, saying thank you, because that's where you're gonna see the ROI compound over years versus the quick ROI off of just a quick direct mail campaign. But I won't say no to either one. I mean, we'll help you with whatever you want to do.
Direct mail can be hard to make work, but I mean, it works. And another thing people need to realize is salesmanship and print, garbage in, garbage out. So you have to know your sales process. You have to have those conversations with people. And if you've got like a LinkedIn lead gen campaign that works really well, if you took that and put it into an offline handwritten note, because the internet is the most efficient, but it is not the most effective. And well-targeted direct mail, where you're talking about like a 1% rate, like well-targeted direct mail can have a huge response rate, 20%, 30% response rate, if done well, if done right.
Yeah.
And so I think that
there's a lot that goes into it. It's the list. Like what type of list are you getting? Where are you getting the data? Is data accurate? Is it clean? Is it properly targeted? And then you got to think about, and this is why it's been pretty tough to scale this company, is because you got to talk to somebody who understands all this stuff. It's like now creating the flyer, like the content, then you got to create the copy, then how are you going to track it, call rel, QR codes, landing pages. That's why we work with large institutions who have teams in place that can do this type of stuff. But our website couldn't be easier to use. Anybody can go and just create your card, drop your logo and upload a list, but it's the large campaigns. You're talking hundreds of thousands of pieces where a serious investment is being made, where you just want to make sure everything goes good. Just got to have a bunch of pieces that play nice together.
Right. So for people that know that using it for retention is almost a guaranteed win, and it can be used for prospecting, but it's like paid ads in the sense that you have to know what you're doing. And in the beginning, you're typically buying data. And you have to be willing to make that. Just like if you had a new sales rep for your company, you wouldn't expect a brand new sales rep to go out and make sales their first day. There would be a learning, so to speak. And then that's, if you're going to use it for prospecting, that's a good way to think about it.
Yeah.
That you can model, you can test with online ads and then take what worked and put it into something that's a little more personal. So Rick, yeah. people love this. If they want to learn more, where do they go to find out more info and get in touch?
Yeah, first I would say if you're even remotely interested in learning about robotic handwritten notes and how we help people, just go to Simply Noted. It's S-I-M as in Mary, P-L-Y, noted.com. And you'll see request a sample right there in the middle of the page. We'll send you a really nice kit, tons of handwriting samples, case studies, flyers, pricing, all that stuff. And we usually get it out next day and it's in your mailbox within 3 or 4 days. Or I'm on LinkedIn basically all day. Just go to LinkedIn. My name's Rick Elmore, E-L-M-O-R-E. If you have any questions, I'm happy to connect there. My inbox is usually pretty full. So if I don't get back to you right away, I usually get back within the same day, if not next morning. Yeah, those are the two places you can get in contact with me.
Perfect. So everyone go get your free kit. Go check out simplynoted.com, S-I-M-P-L-Y-N-O-T-E-D.com. And go check out Rick Elmore on LinkedIn, R-I-C-K-E-L-M-O-R-E. Rick, thank you so much. This has been an honor and pleasure. This is going to be a timeless call, whether it's now, whether it's 5 years from now. I think this is going to be a very valuable call. People may want to listen to it more than once. And just thank you for your time, knowing you got your own following, your own audience, your own people to take care of. Thank you for coming and sharing with me and mine.
Thanks, Darrell. It's great to be here.